This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now we're going to wrap up the radio hour today by getting outside a little bit and showing a visitor around town.
It looks like a willow, that one?
That's a willow. Yeah,
the visitor is Carl Ove Knausgård. And if you know his name, it's for his huge autobiographical novel, 6 volumes worth, called My Struggle. It was an unlikely literary hit that describes the events of his life in infinite detail. Knausgård's new project is only a bit less ambitious. It's a 4-part series named after the seasons, one book per season. And each book consists of dozens of short essays, reflections on the most common things addressed to his then-unborn daughter. The first book in the series is Autumn, and it was just published. When Carl Ove Knausgård was in town recently, he took a long walk with The New Yorker's Josh Rothman.
So we're in this particularly lovely spot, part of Central Park. I wonder, could you just describe where we are as best you can?
Yeah.
What you see?
No,
in front
it's
of
yeah, it's water here, and it's kind of green. What would you say the color is? It's dark, dark green,
mm-hmm.
muddy green.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't see through it, and there's a lot of leaves floating on it, which are yellow, and then you have rocks coming down. So it really is grey and green and yellow just around us. And you have some rocks with people on, and the people look extremely not in the nature. They are, you know, the colours of the clothes are very different. They are not part of this. They're coming here to see it and be seen. And then you have the skyscrapers behind, which makes it kind of incredibly beautiful. It frames it. And I would, if I'd been a painter, I would love to paint those people there.
Yeah.
It would have been fantastic if I could, you know. So you are also a bit confused, because if you just sit down, it is like it is you are in a forest or in the woods somewhere. And if you look up, it is you are in a city. And those two perspectives is hard to get together.
It's funny how Central Park has gotten more beautiful with time since when it was first laid out. There weren't these buildings.
Yeah.
So it was more of just a park. You were just in a park.
Yeah.
It didn't have the same uniqueness that it has now, I guess. You know.
But it also made me feel sad a bit, because it is in a city, you know. It is something, I don't know why that is, but if I should write about it, I would have written about that, I think.
The feeling that it's a little sad.
Yeah, a little sad it is.
No, I know what you mean, and it always has a slightly, like, artificial vibe.
Yeah,
a little bit
but
of a
yeah, but it's also strange. Why shouldn't we embrace the artificial? I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's wonderful, isn't it? We have created it, and it is made, and it is great. But I do feel that often. It's the same with the internet. I do have this same sadness mm-hmm. when I think mm-hmm. of it.
It makes you sad, the internet makes you sad.
Yeah,
yeah.
It does. It keeps my children indoor, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, me too.
And just over there, I think it must be a cherry tree, isn't it not? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wrote about in one of the books, when they blossom.
Yeah,
I don't think how shy they are when they blossom. You don't see them now, it's just part of the green. And then they can become incredibly beautiful and blossoming and with a kind of a shyness to them. which is to me, you know, it's like being, yeah, my daughter is that age, she's 13, mm-hmm. and she's kind of blossoming somehow, mm-hmm. and she's being aware of how beautiful she is, and that's the quality of a cherry tree somehow, if you know what I mean.
The origin of this book seems like it's partly being a father.
Yeah.
It's like about children, and you capture so much of what it's like to think and feel when you're young. But I wonder if you could just say something about how do you think the way that children live is different from the way that adults live?
You know, I have 4 children. Mm-hmm. And maybe when I spend a summer day with them, it's, to me, it is like nothing. It is like just, time is just passing. There's nothing remarkable happening. It's like the world is not attached to me, or I'm not attached to the world anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I remember the summer days when I was a child myself, how important everything were and how attached I was to what happened, and how slowly those days evolved somehow. And I find it very easy to underestimate my children, that I don't see them. They're just, you know, little creatures, and, you know, not realizing that they have a enormous, huge and independent inner life, which somehow I think the task as a parent is to be aware of that.
Is it ever hard to re-engage with your family life after you've been secluded in your writing?
No, because it is part of the same. I mean, they run in and out, and I never isolate, you know, physically when they are there.
Yeah.
When at school, I do. When I was young, I believed in that. So then I went out to islands and lighthouses and wrote and was completely alone and thought that was what it took to be a writer. You know, solitude. But now it's the opposite. I mean, I've never written so much as I had when I have children. So it's like, it's, yeah, just flowing with children and words.
Why is that? Like, what is it about being surrounded by the kids that makes it somehow easier?
Well, you have to lower your, you know, self-criticism. You can't afford it. You have just to write when you can write. Mm. And that's such a good thing. Mm. It's like... The notion of a masterpiece is no longer relevant. Hmm. It's just have to write today.
Just what you can do.
Yeah.
In that time.
And that's a liberating thing, really.
Yeah. So you were saying earlier that you had been in Albania to witness a brain surgery. Could you explain what were you doing there?
I read this book by a British neurosurgeon called Henry Marsh, and the book is called Do No Harm, and I was really, really taken by it. And then a newspaper asked me, you know, do you want to write for us, and what do you want to write? And I said, I want to meet him. Then I was in touch with him, and he said, well, I'm going to Albania and Nepal, and you can meet me there. And I did. So I traveled down to Albania, and I witnessed 2 brain surgeries there.
What did you think when you saw the brain exposed in the surgical theater?
It was, first of all, it was extremely beautiful, which I didn't expect. I saw it through, you know, magnifying lens. So it was like landscapes, like you were seeing a landscape, but the rivers were red, and there was a kind of a white, it looked like a glacier, you know, and then the red river come flushing over it, and it was incredibly beautiful, and the white glacier was, of course, you know, the cancer.
Right.
Yeah. So it was very weird and strange and very beautiful.
So it really was like he describes in the book. Yeah. Henry Marsh, yeah. Because he talks about that, and that it's this, he says it's like the arches of a cathedral, the veins. It's actually it's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
But when you see it from a, you know, without that, it's just a gray lump. It is nothing. And then you open it up, and it is absolutely magical. Look at that.
Oh.
It's a turtle.
It's a turtle.
Yeah. Just a head above the water. And the head is like a snake, so I hate snakes, so it's a bit... Oh, now it's diving down. You heard me. It disappeared completely.
It's pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm going to remember. That turtle.
There he is.
Oh. Oh, it is a strange creature.
What is it that's so strange about the turtle?
It's the age. They're so incredibly old species. But that he or she is very young. That kind of amazed me. Also with frogs. You sense a certain primitive thing, but not to him or her. It's not primitive at all. It is them and their life. And I just feel it's so strange to be contemporary to sharks and turtles and snakes and frogs. And
it's funny, moments like that where, because I think this is a theme in the book too, where it's like the things that are almost eternal kind of next to the things that are very transient.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that the world is a kind of unchanging place? Like when you look at a turtle like that, it makes you think, or these rocks here.
Yeah.
Does it feel to you like we're just sort of temporary visitors in an ancient place? Or how do you think about the age of the world?
I never asked myself that question. I was just made me think of something because I was in a reception in London. It was full of people and it was very hot. And I fainted, and I didn't know I was fainting. Of course, I just like that. And it was when I came back, there was a lot of people above me looking at me, and it was like I was in darkness still, and I couldn't understand where I was. I didn't know who I was. I had no idea, and I wondered if I was, in another dimension looking at those people, and I couldn't relate to it. And it was like, and then I thought I must be dead, and this must be something from my childhood I'm remembering. And it was so intense because I was also surrounded by darkness. It was like they were looking at you, and I couldn't relate to anything. And then kind of I fell in, and then it was okay again. But I think that's the closest I've come to. I think that must be how it is to be dead. Not looking back, but just. Mm-hmm. The blackness that comes, it's
all
like it just it's like it's like it was something black coming like that, and then it is nothing, it's just gone.
Can we go this way, or does it end? This is pretty here, isn't it?
The New Yorker's Josh Rothman with the Norwegian writer Karl Ove Knausgård. His new book of essays is called Autumn, and the next volume, Winter, will be out in the winter.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.